Welcome to the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast, folks. So glad you can join us. This is episode 51 on Tuesday, the 22nd of March, 2016. And my name is Wayne.
My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast where we count down lists associated with movies and occasionally TV, so you don't have to make the tough decisions about what to watch next.
Damn straight. You know, what are we doing today, Paul?
Today we have a straightforward countdown for you. No review, no new review of any movies out this particular week. Instead, we're focusing on a very important topic, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Today we are going to count down the top 10 plot twists in movies.
The best ever.
And it's a tough one, this one, because you don't want to spoil shit for people.
Oh no, we're going to be spoiling shit.
So, I know, but we don't want to, but we are going to. But it's not going to be like movies that came out, you know, real crazy recently or anything. No. We're focusing more on the back in the day, sort of.
I don't think I've got anything on my list that's in the last 5 years.
No, me neither. Me neither. So, definitely not.
Obviously, if you're listening along to this, you're happy to be spoiled in a sense. I guess if we say a name of a film, you'll know there's a twist, but you can always skip ahead. But let's not worry too much about that. I'm sure people will get behind a countdown of this particular nature.
I should think so.
Yeah. Before we get there, though, we should refer back to episode 50.
Yeah.
Which we did last week, where we reviewed 10 Cloverfield Lane and counted down the best single location films. Got a little bit of feedback on Twitter, primarily because it was our 50th ep. And I don't think, I mean, we acknowledged it on the day a little bit, but we didn't make a big song and dance about it.
We did not.
Because we have a big song and dance planned for next week's 52nd episode, our year anniversary. Mm. But it was very kind of Twitter to get behind us, including Chris at darkness_78, who is a friend of the show.
He is indeed.
He did say, "Raise the Willow Lads to a mighty fine half century of episodes," which Wayne did have to ask me about a little earlier.
What does "Raise the Willow" mean for you American viewers or anyone else?
It is a cricketing term. It means that you have scored 50 runs and not gotten out. So you raise the bat and acknowledge that to the crowd.
Which evidently is made of willow, is that right?
That's right.
All right. Okay, good. Thanks, Chris.
The countdown movie and TV reviews where we also get your weird sporting analogies sorted for you.
I don't know dick about sports.
Also, thanks to the Drunken Dork podcast at the Drunken Dork, who wished us well on this particular achievement.
Thanks, guys.
And also Faces and Aces LV pod. That's where Chris, both of those are great pod and family podcasts, and Chris, as well as saying congratulations, said that he would have had Clerks in his list of the best single location films.
Mm, and you made a mention that you thought that wasn't quite on brief, but then again, a lot of mine weren't. So hey, that's a good one. I thought about that. I did think about that
We
one.
Played fast and loose a little bit with last week. Open All Powers podcast, at Open All Powers, they also said congratulations on reaching 50 episodes. Thank you, gentlemen. And So Wizard podcast, at So Wizard podcast, said 50. It's all downhill from here. So thanks, Joey, from that show as well. Again, two more Pod and Family podcasts. And from the Poop Culture podcast. In fact, your favourite named podcast in the world.
Oh, yeah. I love that, Poop Culture.
Or more specifically from Rick Mancrush, one of the hosts of the show. He said, he referenced us as one of his favourite podcasts. And he asked, "Do I need to bother seeing 10 Cloverfield Lane? Is there enough for me to debate with the Booby Brothers?" Which is his co-host, whether he should see it.
I think so. I mean, this is an unusual movie. You should check it out. You should check it out just purely on that.
The Man Crush does tend to like these very action-oriented films, though, so...
Ooh, yeah. Well, so do I. But even I thought this was, after some thinking about it and shit, I decided I liked it. I would still recommend it. If he's a movie guy, he should just see it, just so he's seen it.
Okay, there we go. That's the feedback we got on Twitter this week.
Mm-hmm.
But we did get an email from a new listener, which I wanted to shout out.
Yeah.
It was a couple of weeks back, and I did miss it in the throng of emails we get from Twitter-based notifications. Probably need to sort that out. From Tracy. She wrote, "I figure with the new Captain America and X-Men movies coming out in May, you guys could do a countdown of your favourite trilogies."
That's a good one.
Yeah. Well, it's not an idea that we had considered, so I reckon that's definitely going on the books. Thank you, Tracy. She said, "I'm a new fan, so I hope you haven't done this already, and if you had my bad..." Well,
we have not.
We have not, and really appreciate you writing in. Thanks so much, Tracy from Denver in Colorado.
Nice work. Look out for that one.
Okay, then. I think it's time for a few regular segments.
Hello, everyone. This is Jason from the Three Is Comedy Podcast, featuring myself and fellow podcast comedians Bob and Mindy. Our podcast is a variety comedy show featuring a wide range of segment topics aimed at turning everyday life into laughter. But we also happen to be pretty good rappers. Three Is Comedy, this ain't a spelling bee.
Three fine folks bringing laughter to the family.
Tell the kids to leave because we're dropping profanity.
Okay, so maybe we're not good rappers, but we do know how to bring the comedy. You can check us out on iTunes or Stitcher, or you can visit our website, 3iscomedy.podbean.com.
Fucking check it out! Check It Out is the segment where Paul and I check out movie news and new shit that happens about movies for your listening pleasure. And today, I wanted to check out news that just dropped today. By the time you listen to this, it'll be a few days old, but you can't get away from this. Disney announced that the new Indiana Jones will be on Indy 5 with Spielberg and Harrison Ford. What are your thoughts on this, Paul?
No.
Are you holding out hope for this? Are you thinking it's too late? You think it's too old? You thinking Harry's too old? Apparently his ass will be 77 when this thing drops.
Amazing.
77, man.
Yeah. I think if it wasn't for Kingdom of the Crystal Skull,
you'd be over the moon.
I'd be like, all right, let's see what they can do.
Because
seen what they could did.
Well, here's the thing. There's no mention of George Lucas writing this. Because Lucasfilm has actually been bought by Disney. So they don't have to use him at all. And that gives me some hope.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure he fucked up the last one. His stupid, you know, fucking, what is it called, MacGuffin of using a fucking alien and putting that shit in there really fucked shit up. Maybe this is a chance to write things. I do think that it's going to be weird because even in the fourth one, they're playing off how he's old.
And going to give up the mantle and
right.
Enough's enough.
And presumably no Shia LaBeouf in this one. I don't know. I mean,
please, no.
Surely not. I mean, he probably won't even do movies anymore. He's doing red carpets with bags on his head and shit. So,
just do it!
I know. It's so, but, no, I'm interested to see what they're going to do. I'm sure he's going to do something different. If he's too old to run and jump and shit, but then is that an indie movie? I don't know.
Let's see.
Yeah.
Maybe we should be more cautious, not even optimistic. Maybe we should just wait and see what happens once a trailer or two drops. But I'm not excited for it the way I was for Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
No, they've got some work to do here.
Yeah.
All right. How about yourself? Anything you want to check out?
Well, another thing that dropped today, again, us recording a few days ahead of schedule for this week's show, was the trailer to the new R-rated comedy animated film from writers Seth Rogen and
Evan Goldberg.
That's right, as well as a couple other people. And directed by Conrad Vernon and Greg Tiernan, who I have no idea who they are.
Me neither.
It's called Sausage Party. Now, this is intriguing, I have to say.
I admit, because I follow Seth Rogen on Facebook, and he dropped, like, just today or maybe yesterday, hey guys, look at this new thing, let me know what you think, right? And it was animated, and I just rolled right past it. I'm like, animated, whatever, I'll get to it some stage. Then it turns out, we got a few followers following it, saying, check this out, and it's an R-rated animated feature, in terms of their cussing.
Yeah.
And saying fuck and stuff.
And bad stuff happens to food, because this is a film from food's perspective, and it seems that food want to get taken from the
supermarket shelf
and taken to what they believe is the next life, if you will. And then they're taken home and summarily dealt with, well, a little like this.
Oh, yes! I'm the first to enter eternity!
Oh, potato! Way to go, buddy!
The pipes are coming. Oh, Jesus, fuck! Oh, gummy skin! She's peeling me fucking skin!
Fuck!
This is... I don't know about this. I mean, look, it looks... I'm always laughing at food saying fuck. Because, you know, it happens so often. Exactly. And I love the idea that they're doing this. Okay? Because this is high budge, if you look at the animation. How's it going to capture my interest? I'm enjoying the hot dog and the bun jokes. That's good. And I love Seth Rogen. Okay? Love his work. Love his voice. You're right. I'm definitely going to see this. Well, but I'm like, how is that going to be a whole thing? But, you know, good. I'll check it out for sure.
August 11th here in Australia. So we've got a little bit of time to let it sit and percolate. But yet I reckon that goes on the review schedule for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get some other newer trailers and stuff by then.
Okay. Let's check it out for this week. We have a returning segment for you. One that was created by a friend of the show, Roscoe.
Yeah, this segment is called Cool for Cast.
And remember, at the podcast, there's a couple of lovely lads who swear they know much better, and they're very cool for cats. They're cool for cats.
Cool for Cast is the segment where we recast with today's Hollywood stars, or actors, I should say, old classic films that we like to imagine if they were basically being rebooted.
Yeah, sure.
And today's movie, which you suggested, Wayne, for today's segment, is the definite classic Star Wars.
Star Wars!
Written and directed by George Lucas, he who we just bagged.
Yep.
Back in the day when he was wonderful and worshipped.
What do you think? You want to go first? You want me to go first?
No,
you
go first? I'll go first.
Oh, you go first.
Okay, so I'm starting with Luke Skywalker.
Luke Skywalker. Who are you going to cast for Luke Skywalker?
I'm going with Nicholas Holt.
Oh, okay, yeah, Nicholas
Holt.
The guy
from Mad Max Fury
Road. I considered him, Nicholas Holt, not bad.
So that sort of youthful side of things. Then I've kind of flipped it up a little bit, and I realise the age range here isn't wonderfully perfect.
That's okay.
But Han Solo, I'm liking Hugh Jackman.
Oh, really?
Hmm.
Hugh Jackman and his huge Ackman? Okay. No, right. I see what you mean. He's an older statesman. That could work.
A bit old. He might be a little bit too much older than Luke, but he's got... I certainly think he's got the roguish charm.
Yeah, true that.
Princess Leia.
Yeah.
Now, here's where it gets a little bit tricky because I've gone with a much younger actress than Hugh, but, you know, that Hollywood doesn't tend to mind.
This thing happened? Exactly.
I'm going Alison Brie from Community.
Oh, shit, that's good.
Oh, thanks.
No, because she got she's the dark-haired, sort of, like, cute, but I could buy that she's a princess.
She could kick a little ass when she gets angry in that show as Annie. Yeah, yeah.
I suppose, yes, not bad at all.
Then I went to Vader. Now, I'm just going to assume James Earl Jones has ruled himself out.
Yeah, because it's a remake, it would be silly to do that.
No, if he's up for it, I would recast him in a heartbeat. No one else is Darth Vader other than James Earl Jones.
Yes, you are completely right.
But if assuming he doesn't, and I'm not sticking here so much to ethnic origin lines, but I do love this man's voice, Dennis Haysbert.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah. I remember him from an old TV show called Now and Again.
Okay.
But, of course, you're thinking 24.
24 and Major League, where he plays Serrano.
Oh, yeah, that was him? Yeah. Hats for bats.
That's it.
That's him? Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he's got a pretty good voice.
He has got a good voice. Not bad at all.
Obi-Wan Kenobi going with Bryan Cranston.
Oh, shit. That's all right, man.
I couldn't go past it.
I didn't even think of him. Wow.
And then I went a little bit further with the film, and I don't know if you've got these three, because that's what I would consider the essential cast.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone C-3PO, I want Simon Pegg's voice, and I want Simon Pegg to do the movements.
That's a good one. I didn't cast 3PO, okay. but he's on my list, I guess, now.
And the last, well, R2-D2, who cares?
Yeah, who cares? Yeah. Some cracker in a pin.
Yep. Grand Moff Tarkin, the last person I cast.
Yep. Let's hear it.
And this is perfect. You can just drop mic and walk away after this one.
Oh, okay, okay, be cool.
Charles Dance. Tywin Lannister.
Ah, shit, yeah, that's way better than mine. That's way better than mine.
There we go, that's my
stuff. Oh, God, I've cast kind of a different movie here.
Okay, let's hear yours.
All right, well, for Luke Skywalker, I was initially thinking Zac Efron, but then I went away with that because, you know...
You love yourself some Zac.
He's so pretty. Anyway, and then I was thinking, how about Miles Teller? How about we go a little slightly indie-ish? But okay. That wasn't quite right. So the guy I ended up with is an actor called Logan Learman.
Who?
Logan Learman was in the movie Fury. As the young dude.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And the reason, if you look at the guy's face, he's kind of... He's fresh-faced, but I don't know. I think it could work.
So. All right.
I mean, you know, we're going to have to blonde him up some. For Han Solo, I'm happy with this one. My Han Solo is Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. I can see that.
Because and whatnot. That's cool. So,
probably a better age range as well.
Even so, but like, I just think he's there. Princess Leia. Get this. Emma Watson, yo.
Yeah.
Emma Watson. She's regal-ish.
Yep.
With all the Britishness. Yeah. I was thinking Ellen Page for a while, but now I'm going with... She's too short.
Nah.
She's too short. And now Darth Vader. Now, here's an off-fieldish kind of one. Do you know who the actor Keith David is?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. You ever seen Coraline? It's an animated thing.
Yeah.
He plays the voice of the cat, but he's got that. He's the guy in,
very
like...
Good voice, yeah.
Yeah, so he was in, like, something about...
Stuff.
Yeah, something about Barry. He's like,
yep.
Is it the Frank of the Beans? That guy.
They live.
Yeah, there you go. So yep. You know him. Okay, so... And then Obi-Wan Kenobi. See, I went with Donald Sutherland.
He's very old.
He's very old, but Obi-Wan's old. And the thing about Donald is he's knowing. He's a little knowing. He's a little sleazy, too.
I think he'd fall apart if Darth Vader's fired a lightsaber rating. But okay.
So did, yeah, I know. I know what you mean. I much like your Charles Dance better, let me tell you.
No, that wasn't Charles Dance. That was Bryan Cranston.
Oh, shit, Bryan Cranston. Okay. Yep. Well, then Grand Moff Tarkin, Billy Drago. Do you know who Billy Drago is?
Yeah, bad guy from the Untouchables.
Yeah. Hey, nice house. I said, nice house. Him, right? The reason now is because if you look at this guy now, he don't look like we did in The Untouchables.
Oh, well,
he got some
years ago.
Fucked up teeth and gray as shit. Yeah, worth a look. I'm going to
put that
in there. So
there we go. There's our casts for Star Wars 2016. As likely as that is.
No one would ever do. No one's remaking this movie.
But it's still an amusing game to play.
Fun little fun.
All right, I think it's time to hear a little bit from hashtag Pod and Family and a couple of the shows that we listen to and enjoy. Check out these shows. I think you're going to have a great time with them when you do.
I got to say, after a long night fighting crime, there's only one thing to do. Listen to Geek Yogurt. It's got all the factual information you need about serious heroes like me, your friendly neighborhood Spider Knight. Listen to us. We're on iTunes. We're on some other sites. We're on Facebook. //. It doesn't matter. /. Geek Yogurt. We're also on Twitter. Yogurt Podcast. Do it. Alfred will be pleased.
News on the march.
The year 2014. Two best friends set out on a journey to produce the best content related to all things film. In 2015, they founded a podcast to share their passions with the world. From rants, lisps, and beer, to trailers, challenges, and premieres, Nick and Justin have you covered. Find the Epic Film Guys podcast at epicfilmguys.podbean.com and follow the show on Twitter. And we'll see you at the movies.
Week's countdown for episode 51 is our best ever plot twists. No need to introduce it any further than that. These are the films that we think have really taken us by surprise, come out of left field.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen these by now, you should have. So yeah. Don't feel all like you got to skip it around, but if you hear, you know, a movie, feel free, jump forward.
In fact, the newest film on my list comes from around about 2005.
Mine's like 2008, but yep. Even so.
So there we go. So as long as you're happy to hear from things that are give or take 9 or 10 years old, I'm sure you're going to be okay. Well, I'm going to lead off today at your request.
Please.
I'm going to start with a film from the late, great Wes Craven.
Okay.
We're talking about the original Scream.
Yeah. Tell me about the plot twist in this one.
So basically, this is a film about a small town which is terrorized by a masked killer who's going around and offing people in a very kind of... what's the word? Meta.
Yeah.
Everyone's aware of movies and everyone's aware of how this happens and all the rest
horror
of it.
Horror movies, the rules.
That's right.
That. Yep.
And as it turns out at the end of the film, there's not one but two killers, which explains why you can't quite work out how anyone left could be the killer, which is ingenious and had never been done before.
And this is one of the few horror movies I went and saw like at the movies with you guys, I believe, at your insistence. And it was good. It took me. I didn't see it coming, and it was a hell of a ride.
Written by Kevin Williamson, and it was probably the film that put him on the map. He who went on to do
Dawson's Crack. What's up?
And as much as I like the second film in this series, none of them ever captured the magic of this amazing first film.
I agree, but I did like the second one. So, all right, good. Well, my number 10... See, now, most of the movies on my list, the twist happens at the end of the movie.
Yep.
Okay? But this one here, the twist happens like halfway in through the movie.
Okay.
Although this movie was a hit, it did not play well with a lot of audiences. The movie is Hancock. You know this movie?
Yes.
Now, I should mention that with my list, these movies aren't necessarily the best movies ever, but the twist in them is ones that spoke to me.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, I have ordered this based on how good the twist is. Often we talk about, what's the best film that features X, Y, or Z? But this time I've just gone, nah, we're just talking about pure
exactly.
Twist.
So it could be a crap film with a good twist.
Yeah.
For all we know. It's not really in
all
my
of these
list,
films
but,
I'd
yeah.
recommend, but the twist either makes them or elevates them.
Right. Yeah. And so in Hancock, it's basically a movie about a homeless superhero.
Mm-hmm.
It's Will Smith. And he's an unpopular homeless superhero because he does save people, but he fucks up property in the process when he doesn't have to. He's then
so he's an early precursor to Superman.
A little bit, yeah, exactly. So, you know, he befriends an everyman, a family man, Jason Bateman. And he is, because he's Hancock's friend, he then goes and tries to make him popular with the general public. And he's got a wife and that sort of thing, played by Uma Thurman. And the twist in this movie happens like halfway through where you figure out that Hancock and Jason Bateman's wife are in fact godlike figures who used to be together. And it's a whole long story, but basically since until then they start fighting and this thing, and it put a lot of people off, man. Mm. People were like, what the fuck with this? And then I actually didn't mind it at all. And I was like, oh my god, look at this. And then the movie took a whole different turn.
Okay.
I enjoyed that, though. Like I said, the movie fucking killed. It was made for $150 million. It got a box office of $624 million.
Just didn't make that much
money. It killed, man. It was absolutely huge.
I barely remember this movie.
I know. I'm actually surprised they did that much business. Yeah. But the twist, like I said, was my number 10.
Okay. My number 9 is one that probably a lot of people would have a lot higher up their list, and I suspect it will be higher on your list.
Mm, let's hear it.
It is Fight Club from 1999, yep. Directed by David Fincher.
Yeah, this is going to be it's on my list and it's higher up.
Okay, based on the Chuck Palahniuk, is that his name?
Palahniuk.
That guy. And helped written by Jim Uhus.
Right.
Now, the reason this isn't high up the list, look, it is a great twist.
Yep.
In the film, Edward Norton's unnamed character basically befriends and becomes, his whole life gets hijacked by Tyler Durden, played by Brad Pitt.
Yep.
Turns out that Tyler Durden is Edward Norton, and the whole time it's just been a manifestation of his own psyche, his own trying to break out of his mundane, pathetic kind of life.
Mm.
Now, the reason why it's
at
number 9 is because it just wouldn't work. Well, if you watch the film closely enough, it just could not possibly work.
The only bit that I remember thinking, oh, okay, was that when he gets dragged by his own hair.
Exactly.
Well, now you
He's laying on the ground and he's dragging himself by his own hair.
But he's propelling himself with his legs.
No, it's moving as if he's being dragged. It doesn't work.
Okay.
And so it takes some liberties, and it really, had it been a little bit tighter, it might have been the greatest twist of all time.
Yeah, I mean, like,
it's wonderful.
It is wonderful, and there were, like, signs in there.
Oh, there's heaps of clues.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, Tyler Durden...
No one actually addresses him, by his name and stuff, so I get it.
Tyler Durden actually even says, I am what you cannot be.
Yep.
On numerous occasions, so...
No, look, this is great. I am surprised it's lower down, but then again, I guess the movie was better than the twist.
It was a great movie anyway.
Yeah.
The twist kind of elevated it.
Yep.
But in a way, it almost undermined it too.
It's probably not the feature of the movie that you remember. So, yeah, okay. Very cool. My number 9 is an old movie by our standards.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1987's No Way Out.
Okay.
Have you ever seen this movie?
I have, but I do not remember it.
Okay, let me tell you about this movie, all right? No Way Out's got Kevin Costner in it, and also Sean Young. And what happens is, Kevin Costner's like this U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander dude who hooks up with Sean Young at an inaugural ball, and they're having an affair, because Sean Young is actually already in a relationship with the U.S. Secretary. Ooh. Okay? So anyway, later on, Kevin Costner goes to work for the U.S. Secretary in the Pentagon, sort of coincidentally. He's still banging Sean Young, and the U.S. Secretary knows that she's banging someone, but doesn't know it's Kevin Costner. He then goes and confronts her, and in a murderous rage, kills her. He's about to turn himself in, but his lawyer says, no, look, blame it on someone else.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So he invents this story and blames the death of Sean Young on, like, this infamous Russian agent called Yuri.
Okay.
To perpetuate his lie, he actually assigns Kevin Costner to go kill Yuri, find him and arrest him.
Right.
And in the meantime, he gets people to kill everyone else who could possibly track him down and that sort of shit. Kevin Costner finally does all this shit and confronts the secretary, saying, you had an affair with this woman. In a little bit of a twist, an initial twist, the secretary blames the whole thing on the lawyer.
Right.
Who initially said, do this. The lawyer kills himself because it's a long story, but he kills himself.
Okay. Right?
And at the end, Yuri is Kevin Costner. There is an actual Russian agent called Yuri, and it's Kevin Costner. But it's done in such a really casual manner, where the last scene of the film is just Kevin Costner talking in Russian to his KGB superiors.
Right.
And then he quits the force and that sort of shit. And it's just, I remember watching it going, okay, this is really interesting. What the fuck? It was huge. I was
1987. That's what you want as a twist.
I was a kid. But yeah, that was it's a good little twist.
Okay, that's kind of out of left field.
It is.
All right, that obviously
stayed with me. So.
Affected you, yeah. My number 8 is another bit of a classic one, insofar as a classic dating back to 2003. It is the original Old Boy, directed by Chan Wook Park.
Oh yeah, this is a popular choice.
Huge one. And the premise of the film is, man gets locked up for no apparent reason, for 15 years inside this hotel room masquerading as a prison, and is suddenly and abruptly released. He meets a young woman who helps him wreak his revenge on the people that did this, and it turns out that once he's fallen in love with this young woman and they have slept together, that she is his daughter.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up.
And it's all been manufactured by the guy that put him there in the first place for stupid reasons that don't really matter, to the fact that you're like, oh my god.
You know, for years people had recommended this movie to me, and so I'm like, oh, okay, and Bridget included.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm just stupid, but like at the end, the way that they reveal that it's your daughter by flipping the pictures and stuff, I actually didn't get it. I'm like, so who's... Who's the? Oh, it's his daughter. Someone told me. Then I figured it out. And oh, that's fucked up. By the way, that twist is not in the comic that this was developed from.
Oh, okay.
The comic doesn't have that. That was manufactured by the movie.
Right.
Yeah. So you know that was huge. But yes, that is a big, big killer, kick-ass one.
Okay.
Not bad at all, mate. My number 8 is The Prestige.
Yeah, I knew it would have to be on your list.
Of course, man. I love this movie. The Prestige is a movie about illusionists and magicians, and basically the whole deal is Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman are rivals, sort of, but also work together magicians, and their big trick, or the big trick that they try and figure out from each other, Christian Bale isn't really good at all the little stuff, but he has one killer trick where he disappears from one spot and appears in another immediately.
Mm-hmm.
No one can figure out how he does it.
Yep.
And the big twist at the end is that he's got a twin brother.
Right.
Now, it might seem not so surprising, but the way the movie is played out, and it really does give you clues all the way through, but you don't pick them up, it's fucking amazing, man.
Well, that's not the only twist. The other twist is that Hugh Jackman...
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Hugh Jackman has got technology, which David Bowie gave him. And
Tesla.
Yes, where he can actually replicate himself. But of course, that means the person that he gets replicated from dies each
yep.
time. So that's also really cool. So really, it's just twisty and turny. And this movie should have done better, goddammit. It didn't fail or anything. It cost $40 million and it made $109
million. Yeah, so still a profit, still.
Yeah.
But it was a bit more of an artistic kind of art house.
It's where I like
Nolan
it's,
film.
It's where I yeah wanted to like Christopher Nolan from. So yeah.
Okay.
All right.
My number 7 is from another big horror juggernaut of a series of films. It's the original Saw.
Right.
Directed by James Wan, an Australian, and written by Lee Whannell, an Australian.
Hmm.
And it's basically a film about two men who wake up having been kidnapped and locked in a basement somewhere where there's a dead body in between them and blood all around it, and they both work out that one of them has to maim themselves, or one has to kill the other before they can get away, and it turns out they're the victims of this serial killer named Jigsaw, who attempts to basically make people realize the errors of their lives by putting them in a horrible situation where there's almost something that's impossible to do to survive, or they get killed by an elaborate trap. The twist in the film is that the body that's laying in between them is Jigsaw, and he's been listening to their exchange the entire time, and he rises up at the end of the film to dispatch the one person who hasn't been able to do something to himself.
That's actually pretty cool. I'm too much of a pussy to have seen this movie. Did you get surprised when it happened?
Legitimately.
Yeah?
I remember seeing it at the movies. I remember going, wow, okay, this is a fairly low budget but competently directed horror film. It's intriguing enough. It's different. Then this is the twist elevates it. The problem is it set the formula for every Saw subsequent film.
And
they all tried to match the cleverness of this one and none of them succeeded. The closest coming, I think, with Saw 4 and Saw 3.
Yeah.
Turns out Saw 4 is happening simultaneously to Saw 3. And in the way it all comes together is quite intriguing. And it answers all these things that are left hanging from Saw 3.
Okay. Mm. No, that's not bad. All right. My number 7 is Memento.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Oh, everyone out there listening to this should have seen this movie for sure. Set up is Guy Pearce has some kind of, he's got some issue where he can't make new memories. And the movie is, of course, told in reverse. The twist is, of course, that the person he's hunting the entire time was already killed by him some time back, and he's, in fact, inventing these new things for him to follow and try and find the now-dead-but-he-doesn't-know-it killer just to give himself something to do.
Well, it's not just that. It's also to protect himself from the knowledge that ultimately he was responsible for his wife's death.
Oh, yes, that too. Yeah. Sorry, there you go. It's been a while, folks. But yep. Yeah, that's really got us.
It's an incredibly intelligent and clever film and requires a fair bit of sort of brain work to keep up with.
Yes, which is why I'm surprised I did. So,
but again, another Christopher Nolan piece that's two in a row from you.
Oh, yeah. The guy's good.
All right, my number 6 is one that's a little bit out of left field and probably not one you'll have seen. It's directed by Gregory Hoblit, and he also directed another film which is renowned for its twist, which might come up in your list, so I won't mention it just yet.
Yeah, go on.
It's Fallen, starring Denzel Washington.
Yeah. I remember this show.
You have seen it?
Yeah. Well, so we think we saw it together.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
And a really clever kind of supernatural, like almost a horror film. It's probably closer to a thriller other than that supernatural element.
Yeah, exactly.
It's basically about this fallen angel, Azazel, I think it is, who is possessing people and getting them to basically murder one another and all the rest of it. And Denzel eventually works out that this is what's going on. Won't go into all the details as to how. And he realizes that Azazel can jump from person to person even as the person he's in dies. So he has to lure him to somewhere all by himself, completely isolated, and effectively kill himself. Wait for Azazel jumps into him and makes sure he's about to die. And that's what he manages to manufacture. He dies. And the whole film is told from Denzel Washington's point of view, in the fact that sense that we get this voiceover, which it's actually revealed at the very last shot of the film, Azazel has jumped into a rabbit and is still narrating the film with Denzel's voice.
But yeah.
You didn't think I'd be that easy to kill, did you? Which is great.
It was. And it was like, oh, fuck. When you saw it, you're like, yeah.
It was a clever enough movie and it was intriguing enough, but this really elevates it, knocks it into a genuinely great film territory.
Yep, I agree. Fallen was great. Okay, my number six is a movie called Arlington Road.
It's also on my list.
Is it? Of course it's on your list. Yeah. I think you love this more than me, even. Yep. The setup is that Jeff Bridges, university lecturer, suspects that his new neighbor, Tim Robbins, is a terrorist, and he does his best to warn the authorities before it's too late. The twist is kind of twofold. Well, actually, the twist is Robbins is indeed a terrorist, but you find that out sort of earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
But what he does is Bridges brings his plans to bear by unwittingly delivering a car bomb to a packed federal building. The big twist was that, holy shit, this guy made you the terrorist, when in fact you were fighting against him the whole time. Yep. And that's how it ended. And what really got me was, okay, that was a huge surprise, but that is a huge downer for a major Hollywood movie to end on.
You've spot on summarized that that's what's amazing about this, that they would go in this direction
yeah.
and actually end it that way. The bad guy wins and gets away and all the good guys are killed or
disappear.
And a
terrorist, no less.
Yeah.
So that was big. We just walked out of this stunned, actually.
Yeah, from director Mark Pellington. So hats off.
Yeah, Arlington Road.
My number five is another one that I'm suspecting might come up on your list.
Mm.
It's The Game, directed by David Fincher.
You know what? I almost put it on my list, but I gave it an honorable mention, probably right. because I talk about it so much, but please, go on.
Without going into convoluted detail again, this is a film where Michael Douglas plays a man who's turning 48, and it was the age that his dad basically dropped dead. And so he's very aware of his own mortality, yet he's been living this life where he's just business, 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 and not really living life. So his brother, played by Sean Penn, gives him this present to participate in this game, which is created to enrich or enliven someone's life. And anyway, it turns out that they're this corrupt company that are ruining his life and taking all his money, and he's got no way to prove it, and then they're basically going to kill him. So they're tracking him down to kill him. And it turns out, twist one, his brother's in on it, and he effectively kills his brother in the ensuing exchange when he falls off the top of the building.
That was huge.
And then twist two, no, it was all a setup.
Yeah.
And in fact, when Michael Douglas, I can't remember if he falls or is pushed.
No, he falls, he jumps off himself.
He jumps to kill himself. He actually lands in this big, huge, bouncy castle.
Yeah, it's like breakable thing. But...
And realises it's all been rigged, everything's fine, but now he will learn to appreciate life again.
And it is really... I don't know. What I remember about this movie is it just feels so nice. It's such a really well-shot, beautiful-looking movie. But yeah, that twist and twist was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Top film.
Very nice. My number five is a movie that not too many people know about. It's called Frailty. What?
It's on your list? Number four.
All right! Yeah. And I do remember, actually, it doesn't surprise me, because we did see this one together, too. And I remember why we saw it. It's because it was the first movie that Bill Paxton...
Hollywood legend,
who we liked as... who is it from Aliens?
Hudson,
that's the guy. So, and he directed this one. So it was like, ooh, let's go see this. And I didn't expect it to be so good.
So it's written by a guy named Brent Hanley, who I don't recognize from anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically the story about Matthew McConaughey plays the grown-up version of a young boy who was raised in a family where dad believed he was a god... inspired killer. So he was killing sinners, basically.
That's right. Dad played by Bill Paxton.
Dad was played by Bill Paxton, and he basically instructs his two sons that this is what you have to do. Now, Matthew McConaughey's character is saying, no, this is wrong, and eventually, though, has to toe the line or he'll be killed.
Yep.
In later life, it turns out the brothers carried on dad's work, and he's gone to the FBI to say, look, I've killed my brother because he was the serial killer that you're now looking for.
Yep.
Brings the FBI agent back to show where the remains of his brother are. Turns out, no, Matthew McConaughey is actually the brother that did believe dad and mm-hmm. did carry on the work, and he killed the good brother.
Yep.
And is pretending to be basically him.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next twist is even better.
This is what gets you. You could explain it better than me. Go ahead.
Okay, so the FBI agent is played by Powers Booth. Matthew McConaughey lays hands on him and, as part of the film, sees that he is a bad guy who killed his own mother. Proceeds to kill the FBI agent.
Mm-hmm.
So he does have divine powers, is what is revealed. He has been sort of set up or ordained by God to do this work.
Mm.
But before he dies, Powers Booth said, sweet, but you can't. Everyone's seen you back at the station. He says, don't worry about it. God will take care of me. Turns out all the security feeds, his face is blurred in them.
Mm-hmm.
And when he even goes back to the station for whatever reason that he has to do so, no one recognizes him. And he walks away having gotten away with it because... Well, I guess God deemed it so.
Right. I so didn't expect a damn Jesus freak to win.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Maybe just a serial killer.
Yeah, but, you know, that's what really played with your head. Because you just go, oh, this crazy, crazy, and then it flips on you.
Well, the whole way through the film, Bill Paxton is set up as the dad, is set up as this complete nutcase. And it turns out, well, yeah, okay, he was a nutcase, but he was doing the work.
Exactly.
Yeah. Great film.
That's a great film. God, I hope we haven't spoiled it for you. Well, we have, but I mean, I hope you've seen it or something. Yes. Or even just forget what we said and go see it.
Sure.
I just won't be spoiled also.
So that's my four. Back to you for your four.
Okay. My number four is Seven.
Okay.
You know, so that's where I put it.
Another David Fincher.
Yeah.
He's all over this joint.
It's a Fincher-Nolan circle jerk. All right.
We'll contact both David Fincher and Christopher Nolan and ask them if they ever jerk each other off.
And I dare say they... Yeah. All right. As if anyone doesn't know this movie, Seven is the deal where Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt are both coppers, and they're chasing down Kevin Spacey, who's a complete psycho, and all the way through the movie, he's reenacting the seven deadly sins and doing murders related to them, and at the very end, of course, he chops off Gwyneth Paltrow's head and puts it in a box and puts it and sends it out to these guys in the middle of a field. That kicked my ass.
Well, it wasn't just that.
Of course, yes, please, right. Go on, yes.
All right, so... Kevin Spacey has killed Gwyneth Paltrow because he's envious of Brad Pitt's life.
Yep.
Then he wants Brad Pitt's character to kill him and become the seventh deadly sin, which is wrath.
Yes. Or is it vengeance? Or is it wrath? It's wrath. Yeah. Yep.
So he proceeds to do exactly that, despite Morgan Freeman being in his ear going, don't do it, you know, that's what he wants. And hence, the bad guy again wins.
Yeah. If I was Brad Pitt, I would have shot him in the nuts.
And then the kneecaps.
Yeah, just waste him around a bit.
You're going to jail anyway, you might
as well. Exactly. Blam, blam, blam.
Yep. Okay. My number three has already been stolen, and it is Arlington Road.
Arlington Road, number three for you. I get it.
And because it didn't just make an okay movie better, it completely made the movie. Without this twist, this is a generic, whatever, forget about it thriller. With the twist?
Yeah, yes. So much more.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Good one. My number three is a 1988 movie.
Ooh.
And it's a foreign movie called The Vanishing.
Yes.
Which was remade with Kiefer Sutherland and...
Given a very different ending.
Very different ending. No, I'm talking about the original one, which I saw in a classroom at school, believe it or not. Yeah, I did. It was an English lit class, and they were like, check out this movie.
This is horrible, morose, and depressing. We should all watch this at school.
It was not... You know what? We watched it in two sittings, and then the second sitting. I couldn't believe it ended like that. Sorry, the movie is about when this guy's girlfriend is kidnapped by a stranger while backpacking in France. He becomes obsessed with what happened to his lost love over the years. And, 3 years later, he comes face-to-face with a man who snatched her from him. That guy invites him to the same cafe from which his girlfriend was abducted and says, I'll tell you what happened to her if you drink this cup of coffee, which is clearly drug. So the guy goes, and then after a while, he finally does. Actually, he drinks the coffee, and he wakes up to find himself buried alive in a coffin somewhere beneath the ground.
End.
That's it. That's just how it ends. Boom. And we did not expect that at all. It wasn't 88 when I watched it, but it was, only a few years afterwards, and holy shit.
Yep.
So, you know, of course the Hollywood version made him get out.
Yeah, he survives because his new girlfriend follows him and saves him just
right.
in time.
Which, to be fair...
Fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, they fucked it all up, but I actually was... Because I'd seen it and I was expecting that horrible ending, and then it turned out nice, I was like, I'm going to be happy this day. So I didn't, it didn't kill
Fuck
him.
Artistic integrity.
I know, exactly.
Let's just give audiences what we think they want.
Assholes like Wayne.
All right, my number two, both my number two and my number one would probably feature on everybody's list.
I would say so too. I reckon we got the same ones.
All right, I reckon we probably do.
Yeah.
Number two for me is The Sixth Sense.
Of course it bloody is.
Yeah, and yep. Is that on your
list? It is mine. It's my number two as well.
All right, so directed by, you can say his name, Shyamalan?
M. Night Shyamalan.
They're that dude.
Yeah.
M. Night, as we like to call him around these parts.
M. Nizzle.
Everybody knows this film. It's the film about a small boy who sees dead people and Bruce Willis's child psychologist who tries to help him. Turns out, of course, that Bruce Willis was killed at the very start of the film in the very first scene, and he's been a dead person the whole time.
That's right. You
Simple
know what?
As that.
Exactly. You know what Haley Joel Osment didn't see? That he'd grow up fat. So.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture here on Letterboxd, the banner picture they've got. He's kind of got some chubs in his face back then.
Oh, you're
the
right.
The potential's right there.
Everyone should have seen it. Yeah, nah. Look, this twist. No one saw this coming unless it's spoiled for you, surely.
Yet it's clever enough that when you go back and watch it, all these scenes where you're like, oh, that's a bit odd, suddenly make sense.
The thing that got me was that in the opening scene, you see Bruce Willis sitting in a chair opposite the boy's mother. And it seems like they're talking to each other.
Somewhere in the
scene. Yeah, somewhere in the scene. Yeah. It seems like they're talking to each other, but they don't. All you see is the opening scene where she notices the boy. Mm-hmm. So you're just assuming. Very clever.
And they do
very
the same thing when it seems like his wife, Olivia Williams, I think, They're at a restaurant. And
oh, yeah, and she looks down.
She's eating, and she just puts it down and walks out in disgust, and they haven't said a word to each other. Well, like, what, you're just going to leave?
Yeah, she says happy anniversary. But she's saying it to herself, but yes. It feels like she's mad at him for being late.
Yes.
Very, very cool shit.
Very clever. And it made his career, and unfortunately seemed to shoehorn him into having to make twists in every film, at least for the next 10 years. And we all know how well that turned out.
That's right. It was his last movie. It was that damn Earth one with...
Very latest movie was The Visit, which I haven't seen yet.
Okay.
Which apparently is a slight return to form, and it doesn't rest so much on a twist.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right, man. Well, I'm just going to guess your number one.
I think you're going to guess correctly.
The Usual Suspects?
It is.
Of course it is. The only twist that was better than The Sixth Sense was The Usual Suspects. No one saw Verbal Kint coming.
Except my brother, apparently.
Get out of here.
My brother's like, yeah, I knew that.
Get fuck out of here. There's no fucking way he saw that shit. We didn't see it. Your little brother didn't see it.
Not the most sophisticated of movie viewers.
No kidding. Hey, Adam, kiss my ass, man. You didn't see shit. So, does he listen?
The views of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast are reflected by what Wayne said just there.
I'm not even going to bother explaining this. Everyone who's listening to this podcast has seen The Usual Suspects. Yeah,
and if you haven't, please rectify that. Just please.
We thought this was the shit.
The ultimate unreliable narrator.
Yeah. Film. Yeah. You know what? I used to date a girl, and I was telling her about this movie. She hadn't seen it back before it came out and stuff. I almost gave away there's a twist.
It came out?
I mean, back, like, only a few years after it came out.
Yep.
She's like, oh, okay, I'll go see it. And then she saw it. She goes, I wasn't really surprised at the end. And I was like, what do you mean? She goes, well, you seemed to tell me that the ending was this, and then it happened, and I thought there would be a surprise after that. I'm like, I didn't tell you a damn thing. Anyway, I dumped her. So the point...
All's well that ends well.
Exactly. So... Yeah, The Usual Suspects. There you go. Yeah. I dare anyone to find a better twist in a movie than that.
I would suspect...
sound off on Twitter or the book.
Yeah,
please.
Look, if we've missed something that you think should be in there, please do write to us on Twitter or via email, or indeed leave a comment on our Facebook page, because we do love a bit of audience interaction, and we hope that, especially for next week, which we'll talk about in a minute, there'll be a lot of that. So, any honorary mentions?
Yeah, I'm going to mention this real weird straight-to-video movie that I saw back in the day. I know you've seen it too, but I can't remember if you can remember it. It's called The Nature of the Beast. And it's got the King of B, Eric Roberts, in it. And
yeah,
I believe Bishop, Lance Henriksen.
Okay.
Okay, so this movie...
Rings a bell.
Yeah, you'll remember it maybe when I talk about it. It's about these two people. It's like a road movie where there's two good folks, Eric Roberts and Lance Henriksen. Yeah. Do you remember this?
Yep.
And all the way through it, right, there seems to be this killer who's actually Eric Roberts because he's a real sleazy young guy. And he's like, fucking chicks. And he's like, And then this Lance Henriksen is like a bookish kind of
mild-mannered.
Mild-mannered, oh my God, what's going on here? And yep. I can't believe I'm paired up with this guy who's threatening me. Mm-hmm. And all the way through, you're like, well, how's it going to end? But of course, it ends being Lance Henriksen is the killer.
Yep.
And Eric Roberts was the guy the whole time trying to warn people off.
Yep.
And you can see it if you watch it again.
Yes.
But it did get me. I'm not saying it's a great movie, guys. It was okay, though. Yep. Such a video is okay.
Now that you mention it, I do remember it.
Yeah. And then, of course, I put Fight Club and Primal Fear.
Yeah, which is also on my honorary mentions. And that was the other Gregory Hoblit film.
I almost put it on there.
Yeah. In fact, these two films were made within like a year of each other, Fallen and Primal Fear. So he was pulling out his...
He likes to swing that.
Yeah.
All right.
His plot twists. And Primal Fear is a film about a... Is he an altar boy?
He was.
So a young man who is accused of killing his... priests.
Yep.
And
Richard Gere
basically gets him off because he's like, oh, he's
this killer ass lawyer, and he takes the case pro bono.
And as it turns out, no, you're led to believe that maybe there's a split personality or something like that.
That's right.
In actual fact, no, there is no split personality. He completely manufactured that, and he is the sociopathic dude who did murder the priest.
Totally messed him, exactly.
All right. Well, I also had Psycho, if we're going to go all the way back to 1960, one of the original great twists. In terms of Norman Bates' mum not being the killer, it's just Norman Bates.
Dressed as his mum.
Yep. And also, The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
I was too young to appreciate
so
it.
So was I. So
that's
was
why
I.
It didn't hit my list, but I can totally see how if you were of a much older age or old enough age to appreciate what's going on, that would have completely rocked your world.
Absolutely.
When Darth says, I am your father.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good one. We were way too young for that to be a thing.
Such an iconic line that even my not yet 3-year-old daughter will utter it whenever we flip to that page in the Empire Strikes Back book.
Nice one.
There it is. That's the best plot twist ever according to the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews. Thank you for listening along.
Thank you very much.
Let's talk a little bit, though, about what's coming up next.
For our 52nd episode, our one-year Countdown anniversary app.
Woohoo, we are turning one.
That's right. It's a big one. It's a big one, at least for me. We're going to be reviewing the first big release of the summer. Of course, I'm talking about Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. And then we're going to go and count down the top 10 movie rivalries of all time. And we're going to invite back our...
Resident expert.
We're going to call him a rivalries expert, Alejandro.
Yeah.
That's going to be, I think, a lot of fun.
Huge episode. We're also going to be doing our Rewind Be Kind segment, where we are finally getting around to reviewing... re-reviewing Tango and Cash.
Tango and Cash.
Yeah, a great film, at least the way I remember it from our youth, so we'll see whether it actually holds up. And then, because it is the one-year anniversary, we're going to do a special one-off segment. We're going to ask you, the listeners, to write in to us with any movie or TV-related question that you want the answer to. A burning topic that you have to know the answer to. Wayne and I will sort it here, live on air.
That's right.
For you, with the help of our resident rivalry expert.
Alejandro, right.
So it can be anything. It could be, what film should this be, or any conundrum you might have. We'll take a stab at answering it for you. No, we won't. We will get it right
yes.
as we answer it for
the
you.
The definitive answers will be right here.
So that'll also be up on Twitter. We'll post it up on Facebook and invite questions there as well. We want as many questions as we can possibly get to mark this huge occasion. Be a part of our show. Please do let us know what questions you have.
Right.
And then the week after, for the Letdown 53rd episode, we're going to be doing... returning to TV. We haven't had a TV-centric episode in a long time, and, well, what's just dropped, and what many people have already watched a fair few, if not already all the episodes of, is Daredevil Season 2. So we're going to review the episodes that we've managed to watch by then, maybe not the whole season, but as many of them as possible, and we're going to do an associated countdown of the top 10 male TV characters.
Yep, and that'll be fun.
Will be the last episode Wayne is here for before he has a well-earned holiday.
Yeah.
More on what's going to happen when he's gone next week.
Very exciting, people.
How do people get in contact with us, Wayne?
If you want to find us on Facebook, search for the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast on Facebook, or if you want to send us an email, just send one to thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
On Twitter, we are @thecountdownpc. We are also hosting episodes on Stitcher, Spreaker, and of course on Podomatic, where all our episodes basically reside. Please like us there or follow us there. And on iTunes, most importantly, leave us a rating, leave us a review if you have the time to do so. That's what helps us rise up the list. That's what helps us get to more listeners, which is the aim of our game. One last time, #PodAndFamily on Twitter, a whole host of excellent shows there. I just want to mention a specific few. Let's start with the ones that we actually appeared on in the last week. So the Epic Film Guys episode, which we crossed over with them to talk about the Nolan vs. Batman films and Superman fucking Returns.
Nick and Justin, yes.
Has dropped. It's air episode 11. Please check that one out.
And their back,
catalogue. Yes, it is. And we love those guys. Fantastic. Something Something podcast with Dan and Kev, who've been on our show, we've been on theirs. And also the Classy Little podcast with Emily and James.
Yeah.
We appeared on their most recent episode, Cheers to Mistakes, with a little segment about the biggest mistakes in movies. And finally, the Open All Powers podcast, where I've been communicating a fair bit with The Locomotive, one of the hosts of the show, hopefully to get a crossover going regarding a TV-centric episode a little later in the year.
Check them out, definitely.
All right, that's all for today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you along. Thank you so much for joining us again. We look forward to hearing from you before episode 52 and then actually bringing that to you.
Till next week, folks. My name is Wayne.
My name is Paul.
See you soon. And don't be, like, asking questions like, hey, do you and Paul fuck each other up the ass? Spoilers, yes. You can cut that. I just want to throw it in.
Yeah, it might be the end of the episode. Let's go with that.
Okay.